welcome to the talking show on K Chung Radio, Chinatown's only micro broadcasting radio solution.
I love that it's a solution, but what is the problem?
The problem is that the airwaves are muddled with too many solutions that are not providing good content for those forward-thinking, left-leaning listeners out there.
It can't all be democracy now. That's the message after these controversial midterm elections here in the United States for our international listeners on the international network of computers.
Yeah, so elections of this scale in America, do they make their way up there to Canada? Are you guys worried about it when it's happening?
No, you hear about American politics on all the news of the world.
Yeah, I imagine so.
It's a popular topic for all news things.
Yeah.
What else happened this week? The Giants won the World Series.
How was that, Steve?
Well, funny you should ask, because I was in San Francisco when it happened.
Wait, what were you doing in San Francisco?
I was doing my job as a visual artist, giving a talk.
You were talking.
I was doing my talking artwork at a art museum in San Francisco, the Wattis.
Hmm.
And
where does that name come from?
I don't know. I assume there's a donor.
A rich guy.
Like a Jake Wattis or someone like that who endowed the thing.
Jeffrey Wattis.
Jeffrey Wattis.
The Jake, third.
Jake Wattis. Robert Wattis. You like that one, huh?
I like that one. Alan Wattis.
That's pretty good. I think we can come up with a lot of good ones.
Okay, let's proceed.
But yeah, so I was in San Francisco, and that is a strange town. I'm not wrong, right?
I have very mixed feelings about it.
Like what?
Let's see. I guess I wish that, you know, handmade clothing and great cocktails were my only cultural concerns.
Right. It's amazing. It's like you think that there should be other things to care about. And then it seems like really there are not.
Well, you know, right? it's like the way people bash LA as just being all of these kind of, you know, plastic surgery ridden bimbos walking around, which we have a good deal of that, but sure. There's other stuff. Yeah. There's K Chung. Yeah. There are things going on.
Yeah.
But in San Francisco, it's tough. I think it's a tough place. They're really getting pushed out.
You know, what was amazing to me was how many healthy looking people there were there. I don't think I've seen that many healthy people in Los Angeles, for example.
Yeah.
Well, they looked really healthy.
Speaking of talking, that used to be a great place for poetry and things.
It's true.
I don't think it's that way anymore.
Yeah, I think it's sort of cruising.
Maybe there's a couple places in Oakland you can still go to, but San Francisco is definitely dried up.
I didn't even set foot in Oakland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was exclusively hanging out more or less around the Wattis.
The Mission?
In the Mission, in the Potrero area.
Way
those
to
bits.
Go.
And I was enchanted by the depth of the wine lists.
Like I said, they love good food up there.
It was great. But it was nice. You know what was really nice about the Giants winning the World Series? I could care less about baseball for the most part, to be honest. Obviously, I came of age with the Toronto Blue Jays.
But
it's like I obviously owe something to Toronto and the Jays or whatever. Love the Jays, sort of, but I wouldn't say that I care about baseball. But what was nice about baseball was watching people like tear shit up in San Francisco, having San Francisco be, because I was there, you know, like I was watching garbage burn in the streets and like people throw firecrackers into a bunch of burning garbage, and I felt like there was like a little life left in the town.
Yeah, they love it up there. I mean, I came up with the Dallas Cowboys, and they won.
Oh, yeah.
They won a bunch of Super Bowls, and nothing was tipped over.
I think the thing with the Dallas Cowboys, and again, this is also coming from a position of deep ignorance about sports, but like the thing about the Dallas Cowboys for me was that they were so superior for so long.
Isn't that the case with the Giants, though? Haven't they won quite a few recently?
Three, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot.
But they sucked for a really long time.
Okay.
Whereas, I was told, whereas the... when I was growing up, same thing. It was like the Dallas Cowboys just won every Super Bowl.
Right.
More or less.
It was
or
a love contest.
And then there'd be like a little break and someone else would win one. And then the Raiders, I mean, then the Cowboys would go back and win them again. And so like, I think maybe in Dallas, when you do that, the headphone feeds back immediately into the, no, you're just actually placing one magnet next to another when you do that.
They're too loud.
As such. Are you going to turn yours down?
Mm-hmm. That's what this gesture was.
Which one's you?
I don't know. You're in charge.
Can you hear that?
It didn't affect the headphones.
Can you hear this?
There you go. That's me.
Great. Yeah, I think people just expected the Cowboys to win in Dallas back during that streak. Like, I think people would accept nothing less.
Hmm.
Like, the bar was just that high. That's my impression. I mean, I certainly have nothing to add to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't paying much attention, but I know that I remember them winning a lot.
They won a lot. They won a whole lot of times. I think that the trip to San Francisco was interesting because it's like, you know, you feel like it really drives home what a giant state California is.
They're different worlds. I mean, a friend of mine was down in LA from San Francisco recently, and we were talking about the LA art world. Oh no. And
what else do we ever talk about?
I don't know. Tacos. But anyhow, I was mentioning something about Pacific Standard Time seeming like a break, you know, like a shift in the art culture here.
Uh-huh.
And he made an amazing point that I hadn't thought of. He said, yeah, it's funny how San Francisco never gets included in that Pacific Standard Time. How that it was an event named after a time zone that completely right. involves all the rest of the West Coast.
Yeah, Vancouver
was just about
Portland, this Seattle
art landscape down here.
Yeah. I mean, it was a bit of there's a bit of hubris involved in the naming of that thing for sure. I mean, it was its own problem. It was like a solution to a problem that no one asked, in a way. What was interesting about being in San Francisco and doing it with my own talking work at the Wattis was that the curator that I worked with there, he was doing this series now. He's starting a research project on artists who work through touring. And it's a model that's not particularly well worked. It's a model that works counter to a lot of the logic in the art system, especially the commercial art system, because like by saying you tour, you're pretty much consigning yourself to performance art. So that's locking you out of painting and sculpture, which are the big deal items, so to speak.
Yeah. Performance is in the 99-cent store.
Performance is like a dark dungeon. And financially speaking, people can audit me as much as they want, and they can check out how well performance art reimburses you as a lifestyle. But the touring situation was interesting because there are people who don't tour. You know, like Marina Abramović doesn't tour. There aren't Vito Acconci tours. So the idea of people who perform work. Or people who do work and who do that work and can do it on tour is sort of an interesting art historical limit to apply. And I think that's one of the things that got me thinking about how we were going to do today's episode of The Talking Show. Our guest today is actually, we do this every now and again on The Talking Show where our guest is just an object.
A rather small object.
Yeah. So today we have a 12-inch object.
An eminently tourable object.
Probably an item of merch from a tour, actually. Because touring's the thing that these guys did. We're going to play a record in the studio. We've done this a few times. We did this with Bob Ashley's Private Parts, the record. We've done this with...
I think that's the only formal record.
No, we've played. Oh, we did Swimming to Cambodia.
Oh, right.
As well. The soundtrack to Swimming to Cambodia. We did that also as
an object.
As a specific object. Mm-hmm. And this is another object. It's a historical thing, in fact. So this is we're going to play the Four Horsemen's Live in the West. And the Four Horsemen were a Canadian sound poetry band, essentially comprised of B.P. Nichol, Rafael Barreto Rivero, Paul Dutton, and Steve McCaffrey. And of those, I don't know what happened to Rafael Barreto Rivero, but Paul Dutton is still in CCMC, which is like a free prov band with Michael Snow and John Oswald. And Steve McCaffrey is still teaching poetry at SUNY Buffalo and lives in Toronto. And B.P. Nichol, in case you don't know, is a really famous Canadian poet. There's a street named after him in Toronto. He won the Governor General's Award a couple times. He's a really big deal in Canada. And died in 1988 from complications from routine back surgery.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The kind of thing that, you know, shouldn't happen. And another interesting fact about him is that he, obviously being an experimental poet, doesn't pay the bills. So he wrote for Fraggle Rock as well.
Down in Fraggle Rock.
Which, in a weird way, makes perfect sense, I think. Especially given what kind of background you would have in sound poetry to bring to children's television.
Children have a different relationship to sound completely.
I mean, and they're learning the language as it happens to them. You know what I mean? Like, they're not victims of how it should be. Necessarily. So I think that was maybe I don't know how he felt about his job, but.
Well, and as you'll see when we play the long playing record, there are some almost childish sounds explored in the work as well.
Definitely true. I also started thinking about these guys based on some stuff that we aired on the show last week, but let's just come out with it here. Here's the Four Horsemen live in the West.
Hey, Na-e. Para Mariana, Nina, Marina, Duna, Alasanana, Kirala, Duna, 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 Anana, Ala, Anana, A, A, Da, 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 Ala, Inana, La, Kisalana, La, Pantara, La, Kalsala, Nukara, Sala, Anana Pasanala Ikara Sanana Ila Panala Hinana Hinana Nuna Talana Kinana nuna talana ina lalula safala sala sala sa
tried, and so I saw you go ball, and he looked fine. He stood tall, but he lived in a world of pain I never saw.
Están muertos o micrófono.
Oh.
Mis zapatos están muertos o micrófono.
Oh.
Mis zapatos están muertos o micrófono.
Oh.
My shoes are dead o microphone.
Oh.
Mis zapatos están muertos o micrófono.
Oh.
My shoes are dead.
Mis zapatos están muertos o micrófono.
Oh, microphone, they are dead.
Muertos.
Dead.
Muertos o micrófono.
Dead.
I am.
Mis zapatos están muertos o micrófono.
Yet
my
when
shoes,
I am,
they are
who
dead,
cares,
microphone.
Who knows?
Mis zapatos están
my friends forsake me like a memory
dead.
Lost. I am the self-consumer
muertos
of my woes.
Dead.
They rise
muertos
and vanish.
Microphone.
An oblivious
dead.
Host, shadows of life whose very
muertos.
Souls tossed
muertos.
Into the nothingness
phone,
of scorn
dead.
And noise,
muertos
into the living
they
sea
dead.
Of waking dream, where there is neither sense of life nor
zapatos.
Joy,
my
but the huge shipwreck
muertos.
Of my own esteem.
Muertos
and all I love,
microphone. They are dead.
All I love
zapatos
the best seems strange. Nay, they seem stranger than the rest. I long for scenes where man has never trod, for scenes where woman never smiled or wept, there to abide with my Creator, God, and sleep as I in childhood sweetly slept, full of high thoughts, unborn. So let me lie, the grass below. Above the vaulted
grass
sky,
below
my shoes are dead.
Above
my microphone, my
sky.
Shoes are dead.
Here I am.
My shoes are dead.
Memories
Clean, clean, clean.
Oh! Gentlemen, I mentioned to you in my history of North American respiration that every one of them takes in about 6,000 quarts of air every day. That's 6,000 units staggered in and out, polluted by pollen, dust, tobacco, and other chemical irritants. Now, by facilitating our airborne allergy attacks, we can reproduce as words in full range of their image motors parked within their brains. In cases of delayed categorization, our description agents may be aggregated to form a macroscopic mess. Normally, of course, we should maintain our monocellularities with total text density. This is achieved through special motile ganglia. The problem, of course, is the probability of cellular fission at the time of image motor impact. Yet at this very moment, our agents are developing a system of minute conceptual dehydration that will enable us to condense 7,186 deadly images into a single period.
That two voices together saying one thing can one voice alone saying many things still cannot say what two voices together saying one thing can.
I suggest you attach yourselves to their mouths and get them speaking your Get them speaking your way. Get them speaking your way. Paratina. Palafromis. Thanasasis.
Ah! Mr. Madison L. Elk replaces a cup upon a table.
It is back in this position.
A little leaf bends.
A little tea is poured.
As the leaf floats inwards, it strikes off.
The perception separates and passes on. To be set over a scarab of green stone, this. To be encircled with smooth metal and the silver ring placed on the neck of every victim. Communication is To be encircled with smooth metal and a silver ring placed on the neck of every victim. Combat the Salad! Communication is ending with an iron text from the south. Lapis lazuli is real under the feet. The food is prepared. Bread, jam, meat, chicken, steak, ham, kidney, liver, rock, stone, ham, jam, chicken, kidney, liver, steak, and stop!
What I am saying now,
I raise a pair at the time,
is different from what I am now saying.
Disks rising from the horizontal faces.
What?
I am making a midnight cast into Lake Midas.
I am saying now
what is otherwise unsaid.
Is different from what
I can't.
My jam.
I wanted to write this thing.
Am.
I couldn't.
Today it
seems
now.
Saying what I am saying now is different.
Story. I wanted to tell you about a friend of mine.
From what?
Sky used to be right in my eye.
I am now saying.
From the horizontal
their faces, I mean. Yes, that's it.
I am
making
what?
Their faces. They do I mean somehow.
Yes,
ending
return again.
What is otherwise
what was
unsaid.
His name? I don't remember.
There was once a man who said there is no final word on narrative. The end. There was once another man who believed this, and he saw that the end was one end, but which end he didn't know. So goodbye. Goodbye. It means the same, but which end are we at? What is a final word? Any word is a final word, eventually. And now we present the Four Horsemen.
Wow.
I'm just trying something out.
Yeah, I'm getting a grip on that new mic as well.
I heard some of that.
Syntax. Yeah, you know, Steve, I tend to listen to a lot of string quartets.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's one of my favorite musical forms, or instrumentations, I guess. But I couldn't help but think what a weird quartet this was.
Really?
Yeah, there are four of them. And so I tend to hear four voices. Okay, I'd say better than average. Because
right.
I'm listening to quartet music.
You've been attuning yourself to the quartet format.
And they were doing some pretty wild things. I mean, oftentimes there was, I remember that first track distinctly. There's a percussion track.
Yeah.
And then all these really like kind of guttural, nasty, throaty sounds.
Right.
And then towards the end, they introduced language. There are words in there.
Yeah. Well, there's language scattered throughout. I mean, it's more, it's the typical, that sounds dismissive. Oh, it's the language poet gambit, right? The sound where you're just taking elements from regular language and spreading them out.
Right. And the meaning somehow gets sussed out in that project,
or yeah, some sort of like there's almost a substance to language, and trying to probe that substance like a body, as opposed to like a sort of a mental ideal or something, like where like a word would live, you know, between the page and your mind somewhere. And now they're trying to through this effort reinsert the word into your body somehow by stretching it out or something. Because I think they're not pure abstractionists so far as it goes.
No, but bringing it back one step back towards the musical concerns of the performance, there were moments when they were trying to deal with musical harmony,
right,
that inevitably lapsed into a kind of folk music or a kind of Inuit throat singing kind of thing, which I was a little disappointed in.
What did you think about the full on just sort of use of English folk music? At least twice. Just like fully dropping it in there.
Yeah, I don't know. Didn't strike a chord with me.
Right. I think for the time, that was something pretty weird. I think this was made in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And well, the recording was issued in 1977, so presumably the recordings happened in 76 or so. And, you know, in one way, recording of folk music seems a lot less, like the real question for me is what was so interesting about Kurt Schwitters in the 1970s as opposed to what was so interesting about English folk music. So it was an entire like production of English folk, Renaissance in English folk music, like with Richard and Linda Thompson and all that other stuff, bringing all that Fairport Convention, all that stuff. There are people doing that, you would, you know, but then what's in it for you to be, to try some Kurt Schwitters stuff again. 50, like that's the motivation that I'm finding harder to unpack about this recording.
Well, I mean, they self-identify as sound poets, right? On the record.
Yeah.
So I feel like in the 70s, when you self-identify with that term, you have a small set of influences to choose from, right? I mean, because of Ubu and these kind of things, there's some access to that material. But imagine in the 70s, pre-internet, trying to figure out what sound poetry is.
It would have been slower.
You're kind of screwed, yeah.
Yeah, so the argument is that, like, essentially, we were able to navigate material that would take decades to digest otherwise because we've had the internet.
Or, you know, and Kurt Schwitters and Tristan Zara, those guys being at the top or the base of the pyramid.
The foundation.
The pyramid. Yeah, that's who we would find first probably as well.
Right.
You know, when you read the book on outsider sound or outsider composers or whatever, those guys come up, and the futurists and whatever.
Right, yeah.
So your understanding of experimental music at the time is like some guys banging some machines together in Italy and some other guys in Europe making weird sounds with their throat.
Yeah. And then, I can't remember. Who's the... We've only ever aired one other sound poet before.
The Harlemans, I think they're sound poets.
I feel like they're even closer to language, though.
Yeah. What was his name? He's French.
We haven't done Henri Chopin yet.
No. He has that poem that goes re 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 re.
Yeah. No, we did the Swedish guy.
Yeah.
A year ago we aired.
He has the Re poem. I mean, yeah. I remember some of the work. I can't remember his name.
Sven-Åke Johansson?
No,
We also did Sven-Åke Johansson, didn't we?
I think he's been on there.
It's different. Åke Hodell.
I think his was, yeah, that was sound poetry.
Yeah.
Solidly sound poetry. I have a record of his that's still in the shrink wrap that just has the close-up of a grill of a Rolls Royce on the cover.
Slick.
Yeah.
Åke Hodell.
He was a fighter pilot, right?
Yeah, he was the Swedish Joseph Boys.
Speaking of someone as peculiar as that, can you give us, what was the situation of these horsemen?
What do you mean?
They were Canadian, right?
They are Canadian, yeah. Mm-hmm. They are... Well, I know one of them that still lives, Paul Dutton, and he is...
Ernst Jandl.
Yeah, Ernst Jandl, that's it, exactly. Yes, that's right. Ernst Jandl.
Sorry, go ahead.
And he's what you would expect for an avant-garde figure in a small avant-garde performance market.
Yeah, I mean...
He's a nice guy who rides his bicycle to all events, cares, you know, if he feels that someone's getting out of hand. In my friend, what was it? Some friends of mine had a sort of post Load Records, post Providence, Rhode Island answer to the Four Horsemen. That was essentially like an all screaming band. And Paul Dutton made it a point to go see their concerts and then to complain to them.
How did he complain? Like in a formal letter?
No, he would address them individually because it's a small scene and be like, volume is totally excessive. This is unacceptable. How do you expect people to listen to this? And like, you know,
we don't. You
know, yeah, but like, that was so, you know, he's fully involved. He cares a lot about poetry, sound poetry. He cares a lot about improvised music. I've seen him do a lot of group improvisation with other vocal improvisers like David Moss and Jaap Blanc, guys like that. You know, and to be fair, I think in general, I tend to resist putting David Moss and Jaap Blanc on the show.
Too easy.
Well, also not really talking, you know, in the sense where I feel like at least the Four Horsemen still have a 1 foot in actual talking,
mm-hmm.
compared to, you know, David Moss being also, when he does do talking, basically just is 100% theater.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, Blanc, I mean, maybe he's talking, but it's in Dutch and I'm not able to go there.
Right.
You know, you said something interesting about the Harlemans last week where you said that you couldn't imagine it coming from LA or New York. They're from St. Louis, right?
Yep.
And so I was wondering how that thesis plays out now, because we know these to be Torontonians.
Mm-hmm. And therefore outside.
Outside of that area.
North of the wall.
North of the wall. wildlings. This is some wildling sound poetry.
You know, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to stand by my thesis. The closer you are to an art market, the less experimental the activities are.
And so the Harlemans were very experimental?
Yeah. I mean, we only heard a small portion of their oeuvre.
That's true. They could only be in the studio for so long before
right.
their urges tore them away.
Which, for those who weren't here, they did continue out in front of 587 for quite some time.
Fully nude. Fully nude.
But yeah, so to have a band, I guess to have a band like that in the 70s doesn't seem that strange anywhere. I mean, in the 70s, you could still rent a place in the Village, right?
As I an presume artist. So. I mean, I didn't, like, I hear stories about it, but like, what do I know?
Yeah, I suppose you could work 1 or 2 days a week and live in New York City.
Right.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Magical time.
No, I think lofts are $2,000 a square foot.
Something like that. Yeah. $3,000 a square foot and a pint of blood every week or something. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're making like 40 grand an hour, you could work for a day, a week.
And pay your rent.
Mm-hmm.
That's happening for someone, right?
Yeah. Somebody's making that money. Anyhow, so I don't know. Maybe my thesis doesn't hold up for the 1970s.
Right. Or is it just possible that by selecting, I think maybe the difference here is that these people, although located in not just a small town in the big country, but are actually from the small country, in the big town from the small country, have a cosmopolitan set of influences, such that like we can connect them to Kirchfitters or Futurism or things like that. So they have a place in the conversation, whereas I feel like the Harlemans are operating sort of without that more established historical context, and sort of maybe in parallel to it or something like that.
Oh, this brings up a point. I was having a conversation with our mutual friend from Denmark, Rasmus Rolling.
Who is, by the way, we're currently negotiating to have his new talk about the casual brought to the talking show.
Oh dear, that would be excellent.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we kind of came to this idea that that in a lot of the art practices we like, boredom is extremely important, because when you're an artist in a boring scenario, you end up doing research.
Right.
And research based practices seem to be the kind of practices that Rasmus and I are drawn to. And so in that way, I think that living in Toronto in the 70s or St. Louis or wherever,
right,
probably fostered a good deal of research.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I have to say personally, for me, when I go back to Toronto, I do a lot of research actually, because there's an excellent OpenStack library for me.
There you go.
Which was only built in the 70s though, so I can't say that the situation would have been the same for, you know, our friends in the Four Horsemen back in the 70s.
We're talking about the record though.
Yeah.
That record was doing research.
That record had done research already. You know, those guys had read some books. They had access to some rare texts.
Speaking of records, Joe from True True told us that the world can only produce 8 million records per year.
Isn't that incredible?
So right now, the demand is so high that there is an extreme wait list to get a record made.
A fact that you know all too well.
I do.
In your own second career as a record label impresario.
Mm-hmm.
What a sad fact. What's happened to music, people? It's just talking. That's why we switched.
Yep. That's why we dropped out.
That's why we dropped out of that music thing and transitioned to talking, because we felt that at least they couldn't take that away from us.
Someday they will, though.
There's a drone expo next month.
Cool.
Let's see how those robots do with talking.
I bet we could squeeze a talk out of one of those drones.
I think I'm going to make a point of going to the show and seeing what I can get. And on that note, see you all at Hank's in 5 minutes.
Guten Nacht.
Good night.